Welcome to Revive Fitness and Nutrition Podcast with your host, Julie Payton Monk. And today's topic is beauty really only skin deep? So, a lot of time I speak to my clients about body confidence and what that means for them. And that can be a variety of things from weight loss to achieving a fitness goal and to energy within their own body and how they're generally feeling about life and how they look on the outside. But what we don't really delve into is the things that we can't change through fitness and nutrition. And that's where my guest today has a vast experience in this area and is able to talk about this area that I'm not able to with my clients. So one of the reasons that I got Leanne Hunter on is she's the owner of Smooth Dimensions. And Leanne, as I said, is experienced in looking at the other side of beauty, if you like. So that whole thing is beauty only skin deep. And it allows me to be able to delve into a topic that I'm not wholly knowledgeable about. So I'm really looking forward to learning today. Hi, Leanne.
Hi.
So I've known Leanne for about, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 years and thereabouts. And for me, Leanne is someone I classify as very inspirational. She is the definition of a strong, independent businesswoman. She's somebody who inspires people to think differently about things. She is passionate about customer, about individuals, and seeing that individual and their reasons why behind what they're looking for. And I think that's why we connect so well. So Leanne, for people who don't know yourself, who is Leanne Hunter?
Gosh, so I'm a nurse. I've been a nurse for about 10 years and got into aesthetics 4 years ago. I am a single mum of four. My daughters are... God, they're 22 this year and 18. And then I've got twin boys that are will be 8. I've got two dogs and a cat. So yeah, life is pretty busy.
And in terms of juggling family and business, you do it quite naturally, I would say. You're someone who just gets on with it. Do you think that's fair, or do you think there's the kind of mindset around it?
Yeah, some things they've just got to be done, haven't they? I think what's helped me quite a lot is working in trauma, because I was a theatre nurse, so in the trauma theatres, things change all the time, and some people didn't like it. They like things to go as planned, and I didn't. I just loved the variety. I loved the we're changing this, we're doing this, or kit. You didn't have kit, you had to improvise, find something else to use. So for me, it's the biggest part for me for having my own business has been the self-development journey, and really getting to know and understand myself a lot deeper. But yeah, being able to connect with people, that's the side I love as well.
So how do you go from being a trauma nurse into what you do now? So can you just explain to people a bit about your business and what it is you do?
Yeah, so basically I specialise in Botox and fillers. Always wanted to do something and have a more autonomous role and sort of delve into getting to know people better, what makes them tick. It was funny because Botox and fillers were never something I ever looked at as getting a treatment, never, because I had my own stereotypical view of it. But what I was good at was giving injections as a nurse, and I liked it. I don't know why, like, this is probably why I love theatre as well. I got to see things that were just fascinating. And it was someone else had said, well, what about doing Botox and fillers? And I thought, well, that's just not me, you know? And I was like, but wait a minute, I'm really good at giving injections. I thought, well, maybe I could. So I had to do a whole load of research on it. I did some training, and the very first thing I did was I had a treatment because I wanted to understand the psychological aspect of it. Apologies for the dogs. And when, so for me, it was mainly obviously being a mum and sleep being an issue. I was always so tired looking around my eyes. So the Botox, when I had that, when it finally kicked, then I looked in the mirror and I went, oh my God, wow. I get it. I understand why people have this these treatments. And also with regards to the filler, so I've had a little cheek treatment, and again, people lose volume in their face as they get older. The fat pads start to disintegrate. Someone who's very fit, who's very athletic, who runs a lot, they lose the fat pad in their cheek. And people tend to, as they lose weight as well, lose their face first. You'll agree with that, wouldn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Face and boobs.
So when I realised the power it has to help someone look in the mirror and go, actually, I do feel a bit tired today, but I look okay. It's almost like, I don't know, it's really hard to explain and for someone else to understand who's never had the treatments. And the more I learned about products, I realised, we use Botox in the hospital all the time. You know, patients with muscular dystrophy, MS patients in their bladder to help them, and other things like, you know, fissures and whatnot. So it's used all the time to relax muscle for medical reasons. It was just discovered that it had this amazing cosmetic result. So it's, for me, it's something that actually works. It might be an expensive treatment, but it works. And, you know, people can spend a lot of money over the year on creams that are full of water for a longer shelf life, you know. And I'm not big on skincare myself. I don't use anything apart from just water at the minute. I try different things here and there because I have a lot of kind of companies coming to me, you need to have a skincare brand, you need to have a skincare brand. And I'm like, no, I don't, because I don't want to sell anything that I don't believe in.
Yeah.
So I'm at the point where I do want to provide my clients with something, because there are skin conditions out there that some of my clients have. And at the minute, I'm just referring them to people that I know.
Yeah.
That are more expert than me with regards to that. So, yeah.
And I love, and this is why we connect, because I always say to people that I will not recommend something to a client unless I've tried it myself. And I always believe that I can't ask a client to do something that I wouldn't do myself. And that's very much where you obviously come from as well, as actually I need to try this before I then go on to share it with other people. And it's not necessarily that I'd recommend anything, but just as you said there, when you're not the specialist, it's knowing when to point someone in that right direction.
And it's so powerful when someone does recommend to you from personal experience. But with what I do, it's an industry that when I first started, I sat and thought long and hard, because I didn't like what I saw in the industry. It horrified me a little bit.
And what would that be? Because I know you said at the start there that you had your own kind of conceptions around the industry, and like you're saying, there are things that horrified you, because I think there's a lot of myths still out there around it. A lot of perceptions around the people who do go for treatments, and that they're a certain age, that they're the beautiful girls. The same way in the gym, people say, oh, the gym's not for me. It's all these Insta poses, these perfect, beautiful bodies.
So for me, what I didn't like about the industry was, one, it focuses on young, impressionable women. And, you know, this is where the whole dysmorphia and insecurities. Some of my clients send me pages of other businesses, and you know, oh, look at them, they're dead popular. And I go onto the pages, and like, some of their work's really good, and it's like, but they focus on people's insecurities, whereas I kind of try and do the opposite. You know, someone comes, they sit in front of me, they're there because they want to feel better. So I'm not going to turn around and say, well, you need this, this, and this. The first thing I always say is that you don't need any of it. No one needs it, because it is elective. But what horrified me was the stories, because when I was researching with my clients, I would always try and gain a perspective of their journey so far in the industry. And some of them had been in tears. Some of them were just supporting other friends. and people are pointing out what is wrong with their face in order to get a client, you know. And it's it was heartbreaking to hear some of the stories I was hearing. For example, one woman was told she was so crepey under the eyes that she needed Botox and filler, and she went away in tears. And then another guy was told, oh my God, his cheek's collapsing, he needs filler, you know. these sorts of things and comments, I thought, it's so harsh. And then the questions I was asking myself was like, do I want to continue? How am I going to combat this? But me being me, I like change. And I started to see the power that it was giving people. For example, you know, postmenopausal women who have just given their lives quite a lot, and then they become quite, I don't know, sometimes stressed, and they've always given to their family and never given time to themselves. And yeah, it will seem like a real indulgence and extravagant thing to do for them to begin with. But the more I kind of talk to them, and they know deep down, they're like, I really want this. This is what they really want, but they feel bad and guilty for doing it. So sometimes it takes months before they'll actually have the treatment, which again is totally fine for me. And they'll feel guilty for that. They'll be like, oh, I'm sorry I wasted your time. And like, I said, you're not wasting my time. I said, if you come to the decision that you don't want any treatments, I've done my job. Because you've then found out every possible thing that you need to know regarding these, because they aren't for everybody.
So yeah. I think what you're touching on there is so powerful about the fact that you have that conversation to find out if it's the right thing for someone. Because I think, like, I suppose the challenge as well I could see that you have is, like, I know speaking with sports massage people, like, people go in and say, oh, I've got a sore elbow, and they're like, it's not your elbow, it's another part of your body, I need to treat further up your arm, and they're like, no, I want you just to treat my elbow. So do you have that different conversation where people will be like, and I'm just using this because I don't know about your world, but I'll be like, just an example you use, I've got dark circles, but I want you to fix my cheek to help alleviate a dark circle. And people who think they know how to fix that, but actually, you know, otherwise, do you ever end up in those kind of challenging conversations?
Oh, sometimes I get quite a few challenging conversations, but what I do tend, I kind of let the client lead the conversation. To the point where I have a mirror sat facing them on the desk, which most of them turn away from to begin with. And I explain to them, do you know what, I understand, but the reason you're here is to get you more comfortable looking in that mirror. So I want you to look, and I want you to tell me exactly what you're feeling. And what they're feeling is the powerful part, because that tells me then which areas, because sometimes, so they're looking really sad, mm-hmm. or really tired, you know, around the eyes. And a lot of the times what manifests in the lower face is to do with loss of volume in the upper face. So instead of being a sort of vending machine service, whereas, oh, can I get my cheeks done, when you go sit down, it's far deeper than that. If you start filling a face without considering upper third, lower third, you can knock another part of the face out of harmony. And the whole point of aesthetics is to keep the harmony in the face, or to restore harmony to the face. Because people think, you know, what is beautiful? And yes, it's in the eye of the beholder. But also, you know, aesthetically pleasing, it's people who have good ratios. It is all about ratios. I work with the golden ratio, which was taught through Skin Viva. Didn't know, I never heard about it before. And that's what keeps me in line with each section of the face. For example, like the top lip shouldn't be bigger than the bottom lip. Okay. When it becomes bigger than the bottom lip, that's when you can have that sort of duck look, which people think sometimes is really nice. And there's another reason why I got my eyebrows tattooed was I read an article about natural beauty. You know, the focal point of your face is here, like your eyes, your eyebrows, and then your cheeks usually just contour to point downwards towards your mouth. When your mouth is, you know, lips, pillows, sensual, sexual, whatever, you know, beauty is complex.
Absolutely, everybody, oh my word. But I totally get it. It's the same way when people think about it in the gym, when they concentrate on upper body and not lower body, and then they look out of kilter when you see these guys with pure skinny legs and they've got all this weight up top, and it starts affecting their movement and how they walk. So it's that kind of similar thing when you don't think about the face being that complicated.
I know, and I love it when partners come in. One, sometimes they come in because they're very protective, and they want to make sure their wife is being really looked after, and she's not going to be overfilled and things like that, which I totally understand. So I quite enjoy it when they come in. And I had one gentleman who came in, and he was like, "She doesn't need any of this. She doesn't need any." And I said, "Do you know what? I absolutely 100% agree with you." I was like, but it's not about us here. It's about how your wife is feeling about herself. And sometimes it is deeper down and within someone's, you know, own self-development. But what aesthetics I have witnessed do is give that little bit of an edge of improvement to an external thing that's bothering them. And then that kickstarts something else inside. Like, for example, like smoking cessation, weight loss, the amount of people that ask me, you know, how I do what I do, how do I look natural, when they've never had treatments before, and people say, you know, I've come to you because you look natural, you don't look as if you've been overfilled or anything like that. So anyway, I digress, but the point was, the guy then said, because the guy said this, I said, good on you though for coming to support her.
Yeah.
And that gave him a wee bit of a, good on me, you know, the supporting husband.
Yeah.
And then halfway through the treatment, I said to him, I was like, so do you go to the gym? And he said, yes, of course, you know, you could tell. I could tell he goes to the gym. And I said, well, why do you go to the gym, can I ask? And he just kind of looked at me because he knew where I was going with it. And he was like, well, for health reasons, obviously. And we just had a wee chuckle because, you know, people do go to the gym to be fit and healthy, but the consequences of going to the gym and staying fit and healthy is that you feel good and you look good externally.
Yeah.
And whether we like it or not, in society, people judge us righteously or not on the way we look sometimes. And if it gives people, when people feel better about themselves and their confidence and their self-esteem is raised, they do more, they go out more, they talk more. So yeah, this is why I like it.
It's a bit about quality of life. And I think what you said there is quite powerful, because obviously I got into the fitness industry. And it's interesting that some people say to me, oh, you look great, and you're such an inspiration, you're so fit. And for me, it's never been about the outward look. It's been about how I feel and being able to do stuff without being out of breath. Or if I do find myself, hopefully never breaking a leg again, but if I did, I'd be in a better position to be able to manage that. So for me, it's about being in control of your health and fitness, in order that if anything does come from the sites, then you're in a good place to be able to handle those situations. But like you said, other people look at you and go, oh, they're so lucky being that skinny person. Oh, they're so lucky being fit. Or, you know, like, assuming you've always been in that shape or you've always been in that place. And it's that kind of, I suppose, challenge, as you say, that people do look and do judge. And you can see it when other people, like, maybe self-aware of things, or the judgments they put on other people might actually be about them rather than the person they're looking at.
Absolutely. And being a nurse, you know, the things that I've seen in the operations and blah, 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 it's like, you know, a skinny person can be super unhealthy, super unhealthy. And I think with regards to, and I've been overweight myself, still want to lose a bit of weight, you know, Julie.
That's what we'll get there.
It's a flaw that's seen on the outside of someone. And why is it a flaw? Because we link it to society's view of what is beautiful. And, you know, it's so ridiculous. It is so ridiculous. And you can be whatever weight you want as long as you're happy with it, you know? And then that was the conversation we had had before, you know, I don't want to go to the gym and work super hard because I hate my body. I want to nurture, I want to love it. And since we had that conversation, when was that, back in December?
Yeah.
Oh, I've totally changed. And my mindset about myself, about my body, is so far from where it was back then. And I'm probably the same way.
And I remember saying to you when, it's that whole thing about the why, and you'll have this with your clients as well, it's that bit about why do you want to get there? And it's delving into, quite a lot of time I find it could be siblings, rivalry with sisters and brothers and things like that. And it's going, well, what do you want for you? Not what the other person is competing. Why do you want to do it? Because ultimately you're going to be the one that lives with that body, with those decisions, and you've got to have the motivation for the right reasons.
Absolutely, 100%. Yeah.
So in terms of that guy then who came in, and I wondered if you're going to go here with him, because there's still that whole taboo about males having treatments versus females. Would you say it's still quite weighted that way towards females getting treatments?
So I've tried to design my website so that it's equally weighted between male and females, because there's loads that can be done for males, and I've got quite a lot of male clients. One who's actually an ex-Marine, so he does get the piss taken out of him from his friends all the time, but he doesn't care, because that's not what it's about for him. It's not about these treatments are feminine or anything. He just likes them. He loves what it does for him. It's predominantly female at the minute, but there are more and more men coming through the door.
And I know you did a post recently about Botox, and you mentioned it a little bit earlier on, but also still that myth. And I don't know where we pick it up from. It's just something you hear and you don't ever question it, or you don't look into it, about the fact that it's chemicals you're pumping into your body.
So it's not actually chemicals. It's not, it's manufactured, yes, but it's from botulinum toxin. The word toxin is what makes people think it's a poison. It's actually a bacteria from the ground, from the earth. And this, when I realized that, I was like, it's probably as natural as your, you know, I mean, it's not homeopathic. Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that. But they just take the part out that does the job, and just like exactly like they do with penicillin, which is a fungus. And more people are allergic to penicillin. People can be intolerant to botulinum. Say it was ingested or overdosed or whatever, you know, of course it would have unwanted effects. It so does other things, paracetamol, all those other pharmaceuticals. So, yeah, people just need to be careful. It doesn't have the side effects that you would think. Like, they don't make you sick or not. It doesn't make you sick or nauseous. Worst case scenario, a normal side effect of a Botox treatment is like a sore head or something, a wee bit of a heaviness or an ache. But very few people get it, or very few of my clients have had it. I've experienced that before. I switched product and that never happened again.
So when we see these kind of horror shots in the media with people's faces blown up and red and angry,
that's dermal filler.
Okay.
So dermal filler is basically hyaluronic acid, and a substance that absorbs water, which helps plump and revolumize the face. The way it's injected, though, and this is the worst case scenario, the thing is, all those horror stories that people hear are all completely avoidable. They're all avoidable, and it is the aftercare and the education of clients that will prevent that, because it's completely reversible. Well, most fillers, and I only work with fillers that are reversible. So basically, if it's injected into a vessel, it can occlude the vessel. in which case it stops the oxygenated blood getting to the surface. So if your skin, your lips, cheeks, whatever you've injected, if there's no oxygenated blood getting to the surface, your skin's going to die, which sounds really horrific. It's actually quite rare, but I reduce the risk even further by aspirating, which just basically means pulling back on the plunger of the syringe. And if blood was to come into that syringe, I'm in a vessel. Hello, out I come. You know, you don't inject, but some people don't. Some people believe it's that rare that they don't need to aspirate. And people, I love it when people ask me, how do you reduce these risks? What do you do? What's the worst case scenario? Because I get a lot of clients that have never had treatments before, and they'll say, oh, my friend said this or my friend said that. And so, and even the ones that have had treatments, when I say to them, before they sign that consent form, in the beginning, I was horrified to realise that they were never told about these side effects before. And then things like that happen, and then that person is like, oh my God, they want to tell everyone else about filler, and rightly so, because everything that you do, any injectable, any operation, any surgery, everything comes with a risk. And my job is basically to weigh up those risks with the outcome that you're going to get. And if I get the impression from someone that this isn't really going to benefit their life that much, it's a waste of money, you know, and you could have other problems. That it's like someone coming and saying, oh, you know, all my friends are having it done, so I'm sorry, but it's really not a good enough reason for me. I need you to think about deep down why you think this would benefit you. When young people come in to me, mainly young women, because obviously I've got young daughters as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I want to keep them safe. So it's like, why do you want the treatment? It's much more important for me even to discuss with them why they want the treatment. But because of what happened with me when I grew up, I can relate to a lot of young people with what they see in the mirror, especially when there are deficits, especially when the ratios are off. Even when they're beautiful, someone could be sat in front of me and I think, you're a stunning girl, you're a stunning woman, you know. I just let them talk and tell me what bothers them. And a lot of the time people can't say, oh, it's because this cheek's smaller than the other cheek. They won't say that. They'll just be like, I don't know, I just hate this side of my face and I can't look at myself in the mirror. You know, and I say that because when I was younger, one cheekbone stopped growing and one side of my jaw overgrew to compensate. So I hated looking at my pictures because all I could see was this elongated jaw. And I know that I make that sound horrific and like I was this sort of monster or whatever, and I wasn't. And nobody noticed until I pointed it out. And when I pointed it out, that was me getting the confirmation and validation that my face was a bit squint.
Yeah. You look to get from other people going, oh, yeah, now you mention it.
Now you mention it. Yeah, so it is. And it's like, and that just confirmed that I was ugly, basically. But it wasn't, you know. And I ended up getting jaw surgery. Not because of it, because like I've always had good teeth, but they had slight gaps in them. And again, when something bothers you, you don't smile as much because you just don't smile as much. And so I thought, no, stuff it. I'm going to get my teeth straightened. So I had a brace in my mid-20s, but they had said, you've got an overbite, underbite, and if you're going to do it, you might as well get it done properly and just get that jaw sorted. I was like, oh, right, okay, fine. And what I hated through the process was that no one really told me what was involved afterwards, because the pain was horrific.
I was just thinking that I could not imagine how painful that would be.
It was horrific, and I was drinking through a straw for 3 weeks. I lost weight though.
Always a silver lining.
Yeah, you've always got to find the good, the silver lining, absolutely. And I was like desperate Dan, and I remember my daughters came home and the oldest one, she just laughed. She was like, oh my God. And then Laura, the younger one, she started crying because she could see the state of me. Because obviously the swelling was so bad. And when you have a lot of fillers, because a face can take up to 20 mils at a time, which, you know, afterwards it will be tight, it'll be a lot of swelling, and it can take up to 48 hours for the swelling to go down. And if there's any bruising or anything, you know, it can take up to 2 weeks for the whole lot just to settle. No one told me about the aftercare, what my life was going to be like. And I remember going in for the operation thinking, what the hell am I doing? You know?
Yeah, just again going back to my leg, and I never got told the aftercare after like everything went wrong, and then you had to, when you had to go back in and take all the rods out, they're like, yeah, you'll be walking in a few days. No, that did not happen. I was like, what? Nobody told you you'd be back on crutches, non-weight bearing again. So I totally resonate when nobody tells you and then you're living that and you're like, what the hell?
I know. If I'd known this, we'd have done it.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why they don't tell you.
Maybe. So looking at that as an overall package then, because you've touched on when somebody comes in, getting to look in the mirror, and then the bit about telling people about the aftercare that nobody does. So a band coming into you for the first time, what does that look like? Because I'm thinking this is a world that a lot of people don't know about, and they don't really know like what the process is, or they might be a bit nervous about what's the steps, what to expect. And exactly what you said, if they're not sure what it is, but they just know they're not quite happy with their face, how they're looking at the moment, what is the process?
So they'll get in touch and get looked in for a consultation first and foremost. Usually I set aside quite a lot of time for consultations, because if they're quite short and people have a lot of background knowledge, that's fine, it can go a lot quicker. But I like people to feel comfortable that they can ask whatever they want. And I like to get to know them. I like to get to know kind of what they do for a living, how their looks maybe impact their life, how it makes them feel with their partners as well. And because some women have the treatments and their partners don't even notice. And sometimes they seem a little bit disappointed by that. And I say to them, well, do you know what? It's a good thing you don't do it for them, because it is purely, you need to do these things for yourself, not to make someone more attracted to you or become more acceptable, because that's an internal thing. Then we discuss things like product, because you can get shorter lasting products, longer lasting products, whether, say for example with lips, someone wants just definition, or whether they want a lot more body. I usually get my Bartholomew out, which is my skull with the nerves and the fat pads. It took me about 8 hours to do. But it's, people are like, oh my God, what's that? And so it's just so I can show them the aging process. Okay. And especially people our age, the older ones, we're older now, Julie.
I was like, we are now here in this classification. I'm not happy with this.
They're actually quite interested in the aging process, because then they feel more involved, and then they look and they can see actually, oh right, okay, this dip, there's three ligaments here. That's why when we lose the fat pad, we have these lines coming down the middle of our cheek and things. I did a post about temple filler here, because people come in usually and ask for treatments that are popular, but having the temples treated are so underrated, because we lose such a fat pad there. And when you have your temples treated, it actually can open up the eye quite a bit, because as we age and we lose the fat pads, the collagen, everything else, gravity just pulls us down the way, which is why we can end up with a downward smile. But re-volumizing here, just, it can lift the lower face, it can open up the eye. You know, people talk about having saggy eyelids. Mm-hmm. Some people, it is an excess skin thing, it could be genetic and surgery would be the only option. But for a lot of us, it is a loss of volume around the eye. There's such a large sort of fat pad all the way around here. And as we lose that, it just kind of starts to, you know, sink and go inwards. And we get the tear trough. So how powerful it is to re-volumize that for someone. They don't look tired anymore. They look refreshed. And people won't notice. I had one client, we did periorbital rejuvenation. And she was very, she was adamant. She's like, Leanne, I don't want to look done. I don't want people to know. I need to feel better about myself. And the complaint was tiredness. So she went out to dinner with her friend. And afterwards she messaged me. She's like, oh my God, Leanne. She said, you're amazing. She said, my friend said to me, oh, retirement's really suiting you. You look way less tired when you used to work.
Brilliant.
Like, excellent. And you know what, that's the goal. And nobody wants to look done, because looking done is more along the lines of having a face that doesn't actually move.
Yes.
You know, people want to express. Sometimes what you find with Botox is people come in, I want nice natural Botox, which you can achieve. And you can move your eyebrows, you can frown a little bit, but the lines dissipate and they go and they soften and they don't look as aggressive. But the issue with that sometimes is it might not last as long. So then what you find is over time they're coming in and they're like, no movement's fine. But I remember one of my friends, and she always got the frozen Botox. I didn't even notice that her eyebrows didn't move. I didn't notice that she didn't frown. It was weird. I was thinking, why did I not notice that when it was so blatantly obvious?
Yeah.
But I think it was just because that's the way I'd always seen her. I hadn't seen her for a long time, and then she'd been having all these treatments. But yeah, what I do say to people though with Botox is, because it's a muscle relaxant. And I just ask them, you know what happens to muscle when you don't use it? You lose it. So if someone continues to have a Botox treatment every 12 weeks for 15 years, they're going to lose the movement and they'll become flatter on the forehead.
Well, that's what I was just thinking about. That's how I was in the throes of just thinking about that in terms of knowing with movement what that means, but sometimes you might not notice it because it might be like your triceps, you don't use them that much. So you don't really feel that in day-to-day movement. But I'm thinking the impact of that in the face and just how you've been describing it, and that's where my head was going about. What does that look like outwardly then?
So, I mean, it's not a massive detrimental consequence, because you could fill it with filler. If you had that much loss of muscle on your forehead or whatever, you can fill it with filler. But some people, if they've got a slim enough face anyway, you don't notice it. But I think I just want my clients to be aware of certain things. And it is good for your muscle movement to come back, you know. And I mean, for me, I maybe have a treatment twice a year, because you're so flush and, you know, you've no lines. When your movement starts coming back, you start to think that you looked worse than before you had the treatment. And this is where the before and after pictures are really helpful. It's like because it softens the lines over time, a few treatments, even when movement comes back, it still looks better than or less extreme than before.
Is that thing? It's not just happened gradually. Like, you recover, that's how you look. But then if you're getting treatments and then all of a sudden it's appearing, and you're like, what the hell? Opposed to like that thing over years.
Yeah, it appears so gradually when the movement comes back, because it's basically the nerve growing back. So it does come back very, very slowly. But once it's completely worn off and the nerve's back in full swing, the lines are still softer, and it takes a little while. If you had no, and another kind of myth is that once you start getting it, you're going to have to keep getting it. You could have it once a year if you wanted, once every 2 years. But when your muscle movement does come back, it's muscle memory, so your lines will come back, and if you didn't have another treatment, they would come back stronger and go back to the way they were eventually.
Because ultimately you're starting, you're using those muscles again, and those muscles are what created those lines.
Exactly. You do get the argument from people about, you know, I get the occasional troll on social media, which is fine, and I love it, because I like to engage with people like that, because I find their opinions quite valuable. And one of the biggest ones is people should just grow old gracefully.
Yes.
Yeah. And I like to challenge them and be like, what does that mean? What does growing old gracefully mean? Because for me, truly, it's about being internally happy. And if you're internally happy and, you know, or and externally, whatever, you don't want to make any changes, that's very, very graceful. But so is looking after yourself, in the sense of you still want to work out at the gym, you still want to look good, you still want a small waist to fit into the clothes you fitted into when you were 30. What, you know, whatever it may be, you've lost a lot of volume due to the amount of exercise that you did for 10 years to get yourself really fit. Why should you not replace that? Why should you not have the benefits of feeling your best self? You know?
Yes, absolutely. I think it's similar to being the age that we are, like you've touched on.
The age we are.
That people say that about being a PT and being, you know, a fitness instructor. Oh, you're getting old now, you're not going to be able to do that for much longer. And it's like, why? Why shouldn't I? And I think it's a culture, we're just ageist, and that just comes across in terms of treatments as well, about, you know, that whole thing about aging gracefully. Well, when do you stop dyeing your hair? When do you stop getting highlights in your hair then? Because that's all, let's face it, about aging gracefully and how you look in your appearance and how you feel about yourself. So where does it stop? Stop painting your nails, stop getting your nails done.
Yeah, I know. And, you know, if you're 69 and you want to get a tattoo, you shouldn't get a tattoo because that's tacky because you're too old. Rubbish, bullshit, sorry. My mum wants a tattoo. She'd love a tattoo. She's always wanted one, but she'd never had the confidence to go and get one. And my mum's self-esteem rock bottomed for a long time. She struggled with weight, going out, speaking to people. She's more sociable now. But there's things that she didn't do that she would love to do. She's never been to a concert. So we've set some goals. You know, we talked about it. So we're going to get her to a concert and we're going to get her a tattoo. She was like, but what are your brothers going to think? I was like, what's my brothers? I do it for you. And she's like, but I want a big dragon. I was like, well...
You're like, wait a minute, you know how much that's going to cost?
I know. I was like, so, you know, the biggest thing for me is liberation and freedom and peace. And when I see someone becoming more at peace with themselves, accepting of themselves and not being affected by other people and what other people say, that, it, you know, they're coming into their true power and it, you know, it doesn't affect them anymore, and they just do more, and I love it.
Totally. So to summarize then, they come in have an initial consultation with you. We're just finding out about the why. You'll then discuss.
Oh yeah. See, I'm terrible for digressing.
I know, but the thing is, it's great stuff because it's all valuable, and I know the listeners will be like going, okay, and getting a feel for it and totally understanding it, which is why I'm not. But just to summarize that, so we come in, we have our initial consultation, discuss treatments, the risks.
If you've had treatments before and people know what's involved, we just have the initial consultation based on us getting to build a rapport together. Because for me, they're as much interviewing me as I'm interviewing them.
Yeah.
And I want to make sure that we fit together.
Yeah.
And making them, not making them, but getting them to understand that it's a consultation treatment aftercare. Aftercare isn't mandatory for people that get the treatments all the time. And if they're happy, they don't have to come back in. But usually for first timers, I always want them to come in for review and get, you know, their experience and check everything settled down okay. So people can have the treatments there and then, but that's not mandatory. They don't have to. If anything, I like people, especially if they're first timers, to go away and think about it. I had one lady in one time who was very dubious. She'd had loads of treatments by loads of different practitioners, and she was wanting a lip enhancement, but she had asymmetry. But I think she'd had a few bad experiences, and I talked her through how exactly I was going to, as much as possible, correct this asymmetry. And by the end of the consultation, she was like, right, okay, just do it because I'm happy with you and you persuaded me. And actually, I couldn't bring myself to do the treatment because I wasn't happy that she was persuaded. So I wanted her to go and be 100%. So I told her to go away. Do you know what? It was 8 months before she came back to me. But she did come back and we did the treatment. And she loved the treatment, and her lips were very much more symmetrical. So that's absolutely what I love, is the fact that, you know what, it's your choice. Don't feel pressured. Because again, when I first started, people told me they were sat in the chair and they didn't want the treatment anymore because they didn't like the practitioner or they didn't get on with them, but they felt like they couldn't because they're either a doctor or a nurse, or just they're the person that's in power.
Yeah.
They have control. And I don't want that.
Yeah, guys, right. Totally that pressure at any point. Like, rather you go away, think about it within your own time frame. So there's not like a deadline within that. You come back whenever you're ready to, or you can come back just with more questions or discuss something else or something.
Yep.
You know, it's giving you that time so you can make that informed decision.
Yeah. Informed decision, that is the spot on exactly what it is. Because there's nothing worse than having gone and bought something, come home and go, why the f*** did I do that?
Or it wasn't exactly actually that's what I wanted after all, or they just actually realised it was something different, or they weren't doing it for the right reasons. It gives them that whole time to think about everything around it.
I know. Because for myself, I've had my lips done before, and my lips are quite thin. I've especially got a thin top lip that, you know, disappears when I smile. And again, it didn't bother me so much, but see, my daughters were like, Mum, you need to get your lips done, Mum. I was like, girls, enough, stop it. I'm fine with my lips, right? So when I did the training for lip enhancements, I was telling the other delegates about my daughters, and the company Skinviva, they provide the clients for us to train with, and a couple hadn't turned up. So then they were like, you know, does anyone want a treatment, you know? And everyone just looked at me and they were like, we had. And I was like, oh God, I've got to take one for the team here. Right, okay, I've seen you all inject. It'll be fine, you know? So I'm standing there with a numbing cream on, remembering just before the operation at the hospital from a jaw surgery, I'm going, holy shit, what have I done? But, you know, I went through with it and I had the treatment. And the thing for me was, I totally regretted it for the first few days because there's swelling with a little more swelling usually than in other places. Some people don't swell as much as others. But I just looked and I thought, what the hell have I done? Oh my God, I'm going to regret this. Got home, had to get the train. I thought everyone was staring at me. And they weren't. It was just me inside my own head. Got home and Lauren again, she was laughing at me, and my oldest daughter went, no, they're actually quite nice, they're really nice, Mum. Again, I was like, oh my God, what have I done? But see, when the swelling went down, the result was lovely, and I was so happy with it, so happy with it. But having gone through that, I can, a lot of people, especially our age, they're concerned with the side effects.
Yeah.
Younger people love the swelling. They're like, can I not just keep my lips right now? And it's funny. I mean, we're all different. And I just explained, you know what, see, sometimes the swelling, You can like it or you'll hate it, but it will go. It'll go. And your true result is in the 2 weeks, especially with both Botox and filler. So just make sure that care is there. And I usually give people a nice pack and some arnica gel away with them to help. Tell them they can take paracetamol, ibuprofen, you know.
And I think it also goes to show that you need to be 100% sure to avoid that anxiety you had afterwards.
Absolutely, yeah.
So the moral there about be 100% sure before you go in, because you do not want to be experiencing that.
Well, the silver lining of that was at least I'll know what my clients are going through.
And that's it. And that's probably why you put your hand up with the team, because I know you, in the head, you'll be like, well, do you know what? This is going to give me experience, so I'll be able to relate to my clients.
Absolutely, yeah.
And why it's also important not to listen to peer pressure or family pressure in your case of saying, you should get it done, you should get it done. You've got to be totally comfortable with yourself and doing it for the right reasons.
Yeah, absolutely. Because they drew my eyebrows on one time. I was horrified. I looked in the mirror and went, oh my god, get that off, you know. So that put me off getting my eyebrows done. I'm not big on makeup, so for me it's really nice. I used to put makeup on to go out, and I'd say to my girls, did my makeup look okay? And they're like, yeah, it's fine, it's just the same as it always is. Like, because when they go out, it's like glam and blah blah blah. Yeah. So like, yeah, do I need to know? I'm quite happy with whatever I do, but yeah, having the odd beauty treatment every now and again is, I like it, it's nice.
And I'm the same as you, I'm not big on makeup, and partly because I've always been allergic to everything, so even as growing up, it's like, don't even go there. Like, even though, like, you know, the expensive hypoallergenic, no, allergic. And one thing that I have found with being in lockdown is I'm having to literally colour in my eyebrows, and I'm just like, because they go so fair, and it's like you were saying at the start about how the eyebrows frame your whole face. So it's like, I just look weird with not having any eyebrows, so I have to like colour them in every morning.
Gosh, I know, that was it. But then again, for a lot of people, it's time. And that's where, like, I don't want to spend an hour in the morning putting makeup on, or I don't have, you know, I'd rather be doing a Revive Fitness class. It's...
Check you out. That's been recorded, so we'll keep
it. I know. people just need to know exactly what they want. They need to do the research. That is the biggest thing. You don't know what you want until you go and find out.
And so what would you say, time that you've been in the industry, what things would you still like to change about the industry?
That's a controversial one, to be honest. A lot of people think that fillers should be prescribed. I kind of tend to go on the side of yes, I do think they should be prescribed, because for me there's a whole psychosocial aspect to aesthetics, and I see some pages and everyone's got the same jaw, you know, same cheeks, same jaw, and it's like, well, I don't know. And I think what other people see is just sharp, rigid jaws. Some people, I see women with these male jaws, and I see males with female jaws. I suppose that's not my point. My point is, if something's ever to go wrong, in which case we hear all these terrible, terrible stories. And there was a girl over lockdown who injected herself with filler, and, you know, to have it reversed before it does any damage, it's a prescription-only medication. Mm. And if someone is unable to prescribe, how do they help these people? By signing a waiver to say, you know, you'll have to go to hospital. But I know there aren't a lot of hospitals that stock the reversal agent. So sometimes they can end up probably having surgery, maybe, or having, you know, it's not difficult for me, but it's difficult for other people. People want to make a living, and I think even for me, I would actually make myself available to other people. Very much, I don't see other aesthetic clinicians as competition, because I am me and they are them. You know, it's, people come to see me because it's me, yeah. not because I'm doing Botox fillers. So, and I get some of my clients go, oh, get more followers or do this, like this person here. And I'm like, one followers doesn't equal sales.
Yeah.
And I'm not glam. I'm not wanting to attract loads of young girls to augment their faces to fit in society. If anything, I would like to build a team that are trained and having the best consultation process in order to deliver an outcome that exceeds the client's expectations. You know, I'm not going to tell them they need anything. It's very client led. So yeah, that it is. I do think fillers possibly should be prescribed, but it's not my fight at the minute.
Yeah,
I'll do my bit to, I will definitely do my bit to help, but I'm still in kind of my early stages. Well, not early stages, but you know, for getting established, if you like, yeah. where your voice actually matters with those sorts of things, I suppose. Maybe I'm wrong there. Someone can help me if they're listening.
And what do you love about what you do?
Oh, the connection with people. I love the connection, and I love exceeding their expectations. I love how much more confident they are, how they walk out feeling, you know, they've had a great service, and that I'm approachable and they can come back and talk to me about their treatment if they need to. Because again, when I was first started and doing my research with people, it was like half of their concerns were they didn't feel like they could go back to their clinician. Even now, when I get a lot of reversals in, I tell them to go back to their clinician first and foremost, because I would like that. I would like someone to come back to me. Mm-hmm. I try my best to stay more online.
I totally get that. It's about people connecting with you and coming to you as an individual, knowing that they're going to get that connection, that individual yeah. personalised service that uh-huh. they're not going to get through, say, a big company, for example, who are maybe about generating income and sales versus yeah. personalised care and the aftercare.
Yeah, and people buy from people.
Yeah.
First and foremost, it's when big companies start monopolising the market and people have no other option but to go there. But I'm quite proud and I value my service based on it is grown through word of mouth, which in my opinion is probably the best form of marketing. And sometimes when that catches on, it catches on quite quickly.
Brilliant. Yeah. So in summary, I think it's fair to say that beauty is definitely the eye of the beholder and it's individual to each person. Just the same way as I speak to clients about body confidence and what that means to them. And the same thing for any kind of beauty treatments. And what I loved about the whole discussion there, one, the education around it all in the face and the muscles, because we tend to forget that actually our face is made up of muscles.
I know.
We totally forget that one. But what I also love is the fact that you're like, you don't need the treatments. It is elective. So it's about making sure the reasons that you want to do it are for you and they're going to give you whatever it is you're looking for in terms of the outcome.
Yeah. Because it can be quite expensive, so you've got to make sure that what they're going to be spending is going to be beneficial to them in the long run.
We're going to move on to some lifestyle questions to get to know you a bit better, Leanne. Quick fire, you've got two options and you only get to choose one. Okay. First up, chocolate or crisps?
Chocolate.
Oh, see, I thought you would have gone for crisps. There you go.
See, if you had asked me that about a year ago, I would have said crisps. Oh, because I would eat crisps. I could eat loads of crisps, but chocolate I like because I'll just have a little bit. And, that's it. Yeah, no, I would probably pick a wee bit more chocolate. But, yeah, I would have said crisps ages ago. Oh, I buy them less now. I don't buy them as much. Just like a wee treat, wee bit of chocolate. Because I know what I'm like with them.
I was going to say that's learned because you know that you can't control yourself around the Christmas chocolate.
I like that.
You can kind of take it or leave it as long as you have a wee bit. Okay, a fitness one. You can either go for a run or go for a cycle.
Cycle. I know you think I would go for a run.
I didn't know what cycling's going your way, actually. I didn't know.
Cycling, I love both. But I find, even though it's really hard on your thighs and your bum and everything like that, cycling's a wee bit easier for me, I think. It's not as mentally challenging than running.
Oh, absolutely agree. I mean, you know, I'm not a runner. I'll do my token run before an obstacle course, but that,
Yeah.
See, I've done my training now. But yeah, I totally get it, because I think cycling as well, is a bit. It feels a bit more freer. Like, you can speed up, slow down, and it's not, like, say, as taxing. And you can go further, much quicker.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it can, yeah.
Okay, books or podcasts?
Oh, book. Yeah. I do like a book. I'm listening to more and more podcasts, actually. And I do like them. It's just one of those things. It's like old versus new. But I just like physically, I've never had a Kindle. My mum reads from a Kindle all the time. I just like the physicality of just turning that page. I think it's mentally I'm getting somewhere.
Yeah. I'm the same. And just, you mentioned the Kindle. I remember when they came out and people were like, it's the end of bookshops. It's the end of books as we know them. And I'm like, no, I hate staring at a screen to read stuff. And even, like, you know, when you're on courses and stuff like that and you get through electronic PDFs, and at the moment I can't do it because print shops are all closed, but I'm like, I want to print this off. I just find I use things so much more. It's easier to look at and find what you want than on a screen.
Yeah, absolutely. You can smell a book as well.
Smell.
It's all about the senses. It's all about the senses.
Well, here's a follow-up question. Do you judge a book by its cover?
No, I don't. Oh, I've learned over the years never to judge a book by its cover. I remember when before I was a nurse, I used to work in sales, and it was a case of all the training was like, you don't know how much money a person has based on the way that they dress, you know, and it was, you never, but sometimes people just play on certain things. And even when someone comes in for a consultation, I could look at them and I could go, oh, I know what I could do here. Oh, I know what will help. But you can't ever say to them, because you could be creating a false insecurity that was never there in the first place, which is why the invitation is for them to come to you about it. You know, get people sometimes asking me, what would you do to my face? And I steer away from it, especially in a social circumstance, because it needs to be done properly.
Yeah.
Because I'll maybe see this, but they'll be concerned about a tiny wee line here, you know? So if that, you don't want to start creating something. So no, I tend not to judge a book by its cover. I think there is a, you know, I'm going to go into deep, I will not go into detail, but I think you make judgments initially, but usually they're for keeping yourself safe. Trying to make righteous judgments, basically. Yeah.
Yeah. But, I know what you're talking about, is that being, but when you go on a bus and where you choose to sit is judging by who is there and where you go to sit.
Absolutely. I remember when Lauren was really young, I think it was either Lauren or Sarah, and we were on a bus and we were sitting down the front, and she just looked up the back of the bus and she pointed to the man at the back of the bus and she's like, "Mummy, bad man I was like, oh my. And I was like, I'm so sorry. But it was just a young 20 something guy with a long leather jacket, long black hair, and, you know, I was like, geez, where do we get these from? I don't know.
Yeah,
so, yeah. Totally.
Next one, gin or wine?
Wine.
Interesting.
I love both, but I can't drink that much gin unless it starts to have little nice liqueurs or flavours addressed into it. Normal gin and tonic, lovely and refreshing, but after a while the tonic so I would have to change it up. Whereas wine, I love lots of different wines, especially with food. Here we go with the food and the wine.
That's what you say. I love both. It wasn't even like I love both. But no, I know what you're saying about tonic water. I can't drink tonic water at all. I think it's horrible. I don't know how people drink it. I'm like, no, it's just wrong. I remember saying to a friend, why do they put gin with tonic? Because tonic water is disgusting. She said, well, it's just tradition. I was like, well, it doesn't mean it's right.
Oh no, it's nice. Different gins are nice with ginger ale, actually. Ginger
Yes.
ale and some rhubarb and yeah, or lemonade.
Okay, so you're going on holiday. Would you go to a hot destination or a cold destination?
Hot.
You're like, I need some sunshine.
Ideally, I would like to do, and I've never done this in my life, I would like to go on two hot holidays a year and at least two sort of city breaks, cold or not cold, regardless. I want to travel.
Desire there just to learn, experience different cultures.
Again, their food, their
Yeah.
wine.
Yeah, food, wine, culture.
Also, do you know, I love beauty in itself, and I love seeing different places, the variety, the different cultures. In fact, a client came to me because of one of my posts, and I like to post differently so that it's varied and the different aspects of beauty in life. And she came because it was like her hometown. She's like, oh wow. And she'd been looking for someone in Edinburgh for ages to go to have her treatments, and then she found me.
There you go.
So they appreciate. Thanks, yeah.
Final one, yoga or a massage?
Massage.
I remember you saying after you come out of lockdown you were going to get a massage. Was it every 2 weeks or something?
Well, I'm thinking about going for every week now, but I need to, again, time management, scheduling, self-care in has always been an issue for me. But I don't want it to be an issue ever again. So I think once a week would be lovely, but at a minimum, I'll do once a fortnight.
That sounds like a fair target, especially after you've done the Revive Fitness workouts, you'll need it.
I know, God.
Okay, Leah, thank you for joining. For people who want to connect with you on via Instagram or if you've got a website, what's the best way for people to get in touch with you, to connect with you on social?
On social media, a lot of people come through Instagram and Facebook, at Smooth Dimensions LTD, and or through my website. I have numerous ways of getting in touch, or you can just drop me a message on my phone. Don't mind if it's all there.